Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
SafetyFM.com with Jay Allen. Changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
Well, hello and welcome to an all-new episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods. And we get to hang out today on this fantastic Tuesday, March the 12th of 2024. So besides that it's a great and fantastic day, because it is March the 12th of 2024, this is episode, are you ready for this? 600. Yeah, episode 600. Actually, of sitting around here talking and chatting with people inside of the industry, talking about safety, talking about psychology, talking about what's going on inside of the workplace. I would have never imagined sitting in the living room with my wife and talking about planning this whole thing out, that we would be here 600 episodes in and not even talking about everything else that you and I have done together on the Safety FM network and the Safety FM radio station. I mean, it's just been a very interesting time overall. So thank you for being part of the journey, and I appreciate us being able to do all of this stuff together. You are definitely the driving force behind everything we get to do here. So let's go into what we were doing last month, and we were hanging out in Australia and Wollongong at the Global Safety Innovation Summit while we were there in Australia. So fun times. Now listen, what we're going to do today is similar to what we've done over the last few episodes. We're going to have someone come in, they're going to give their speech, and then we're going to interview them almost directly after and have a brief conversation after they're done with the speech. And today I have the privilege and the honor of hanging out with Bob Edwards. Bob Edwards is someone, if you have not heard of before, I don't know where you've been, but he is the hop coach. That's what he goes by. And he is very proficient in all things hop, number one, but really good at learning teams and really breaking down the information in a biteable size in regards to being able to understand these things. And I've had the privilege of interacting with Bob on several occasions in regards to listening to what he has to say. And every time I take something new out of the information that he provides. So as you sit back today and take a listen to what Bob has to say while he was down in Wollongong, make sure you stay up all the way to the end as we have a little side chat and everything that happened during the presentation and what's his thoughts on some of the process of the things that are going on. So without any further ado, here's Bob Edwards on Safety FM with Jay Allen.
Yeah, so I got the Kiwi group right here that's going to be giving me crap all through this whole 30 minutes, right? So it's really good to be here. I actually asked him, I said, hey, could I go right after lunch? No, there's a reason. I think we need to reinstate nap time. Who got rid of nap time? I'm pretty sure my first grade teacher got rid of nap time. Kindergarten, we have lunch, we take a nap, right? We would fight it because we didn't want to. Now, 61, I'll take it, right? So I got a few things to share with you. I've been privileged to be a part of this from kind of the beginning of the hop thing coming into industry, because I worked for GE, a big company at one point, now a shell of that company, right? The Jack Welch model didn't work long term, fell apart. I was there for the downfall of the great GE. It was painful. But they started spinning off a bunch of stuff because they were in desperate need of cash and trying to survive. So GE Appliances, where I worked for 16 years, and we've been with GE forever. They're not going to sell us. Oh, yeah, they did. They put us up for sale. They were going to sell us for $3.3 billion to a company called Electrolux. Have you guys heard of them? Yeah, we're pretty excited about being sold to Electrolux. That's their slogan, not mine. We don't want to be sold to Electrolux. We're GE Appliances. So it's a $3.3 billion deal going down. And if $3.3 billion is changing hands from one company to another, who's going to get involved other than Hunter Biden? What? Don't act like you don't know. Yeah, we know our politics are all over the world. So who's going to get involved? The government. The government said, no, that'll be a monopoly. They can't do it. And so they shut it down. So for a brief moment, we're like, sweet, they're not going to sell us. And they said, no, no, we're going to sell you. They had a second buyer lined up. So for $4 billion, they killed the $3.3 billion deal. For $4 billion, they sold us to Haier. There it is. So now it's GE Appliances, a Haier company. So I left. I'm not bitter. Let's just say the therapy's helping. They sold us to another company in another country. Anyway, but in GE, I was privileged to learn like Six Sigma, Lean, Health Ahead. I'm an engineer. I worked a bunch in sort of engineering and design, but also technical support and maintenance. I love doing maintenance kind of work. But I ended up in safety for about 5 years. And in safety, because I'm not a trained safety professional. So GE was big on letting you kind of do whatever, which is cool. But I learned a lot in safety, and I realized, oh, my word, you guys have to know so much stuff, way, way more. I thought you went around and said, hey, be safe. Like, I mean, I thought this was going to be an easy job, right? And, in fact, it's quite hard. And then we start looking at, man, trying to make people better. Well, oh, I'm 61. That's about as good as this gets, right? I have 12 adopted kids, which is why I'm here. I am not you know, people say, what do you think? Like, what are your ideas about raising? I have no idea. I have no idea. The longer I've been a dad, the less I know about what it takes to be a good dad. And so now I'm trying to fix people. And so I was literally on the verge of stepping back into engineering where I could work on stuff. Give me a wrench, right? Give me CAD, AutoCAD, or whatever. And Lisa Brooks, some of you may know her. She used to work for GE. She's amazing. She was still at GE, and she came to one of our reviews, and she said, hey, have you guys heard of this thing called human and organizational performance? We had not. She said, have you heard of a guy named Todd Conklin? We had not. Well, it actually changed the course of my career because she brought him to us. We were one of the first two sites in GE to really give this a go. GE, Chevron, and Alcoa were three big companies that kind of said, hey, let's give this a go. I know other companies were doing it too, but this is like 2011, 2012. So got involved, and I thought, oh, my word, I'm doing a lot of stuff wrong. I can change some stuff, though, because I'm not totally stuck in my ways. And so we actually started to learn from Todd, and we started to build sort of an industrial version of it, if you will. So like a lot of people know me because I've done a lot of stuff with these things called learning teams, kind of the industrialized version of a learning team. I love what Dave was saying, that this way of thinking has been building for a long time. We're just building on stuff that other people have done. And so actually what we think HOP is kind of, it's kind of a shift in the way we think, which then takes us to a different way of learning, which is going to take us to a different way of building stuff. If we don't change the way we design and build work, what are we going to get? The same thing. Actually, we're going to kind of get worse things. The law of entropy is at work, right? If we don't actually make some improvements in how we do work, we're probably going to get even more bad things happening. You watching the aviation world in the U.S.? Woo! And I'm a bit of an aviator. I'm learning to fly helicopters. And I love aviation, and we've had some significant near misses in the U.S. in the last year. Right? Sort of this brittleness creeping into something we felt pretty comfortable we were good at. And so we realized, man, if we don't change the way we do work, and if we don't learn more, well, we're going to probably have even more bad things happen. And GE, with all their metrics and KPIs and inspections and investing and all that stuff, we were still having bad things happening. So that's why we got involved in this. And to us, it's sort of like three big bodies of knowledge, the way we look at it, right? It's like this complexity piece. It's sort of the systems engineering thinking, which I like that a lot. And then it's just behavioral and organizational psychology. And, you know, the name HOP is just something that, I mean, it's just a name, that's all. You don't have to call it anything, but it's not human performance. That's been around a long time. They mentioned that, like, Three Mile Island, and we learned a lot of stuff from them. But we also pulled in stuff from other people, like Dr. Deming and different folks, right? And Conklin and Decker and Reason, and we just learn from anybody we can. And so human and organizational performance is kind of a derivative, in my mind, from human performance. And that's kind of where we're at now, okay? So you saw the five principles earlier. Todd showed them, right? People make mistakes. We're not perfect. Are our procedures perfect? Not even close, right? We're in a whole bunch of companies. Nobody has perfect procedures. Is your equipment perfect? Yeah, not even close. And humans are in there making work happen. So we have imperfect people with imperfect procedures, and equipment is wearing out, and we call that work. And we're actually mostly successful, agree? Why? Adaptable people, yeah. The human's ability to adapt is phenomenal, right? And so the human capacity for adaptation is what really helps us be successful. I think humans are pretty resilient, too. I live in the South, Tennessee. So we get some wicked tornadoes come through there. You know what we're doing the very next day? Well, I was a firefighter for years. During the storm, guess what we're doing? We're out there trying to keep people from dying, right? So humans are incredibly resilient, sort of brilliantly adaptive. We just suck at reliability, right? Like, to me, human reliability is an oxymoron. Humans aren't reliable. I'm not reliable. I'm better today than I was yesterday. Yesterday, I was exhausted from jet lag. But the human condition is not one of high reliability. So why are we expecting the humans to always get stuff right? So we began to say, okay, maybe we need to stop blaming so much. Todd said it earlier. We don't tell you don't blame. It's just it doesn't fix anything. It actually distracts us, right? It's easy to blame somebody, but we didn't really learn anything. So then we said, okay, well, context. Context is important. It's not just important. It's kind of everything. We're not good at changing behavior, but maybe we can get better at understanding behavior, which takes us to this learning piece, which I'll talk a few minutes about. So learning and improving, we say, is vital. Why would we pick a word like vital? We said important for a while, but we changed it to vital. What does vital mean to you? Yeah, literally, you can't live without it. Breathing to your body, right? Vital. So we believe it's that important. And then, you know, like you've heard all morning, right? Our response, it starts with the leadership, but our response makes all the difference in the world. Right? You can learn and improve, or you can blame and punish, as Todd says, but you can't do both. The engineer in me says they vector in opposite directions. If you blame and punish, what happens to learning? I got nothing for you, right? So I've got these three boys. They're now in they're in their 20s. When they were little, they're biological brothers. They're like, I don't know, 2, 3, and 4. They got in trouble for something. They got in trouble for a lot of stuff. I don't remember what it was, but my wife had them lined up. She looked at Alex, the eldest, and said, Alex, did you do this? And he said, yes, ma'am. She's like, time out, buddy. Corner, right there. Right? Not that violently. My wife's much kinder than I am. She turned to the middle child, Tyler, and said, Tyler, did you also do this? Yes, ma'am. Boom. Time out. She looked at Joe and said, Joe, did you do this? He's 2 years old. He squints his eyes and kind of leans back and says, I'm not talking. I don't think I'm any different than Joe. I saw what you did to Tyler and Alex. I got nothing for you. So we've got to be able to have a better conversation. I love the panel with the legal team. Who's seen that before in any conference where you get a bunch of lawyers up here and say, hey, talk through the real deal here from a legal perspective? I thought that was brilliant. I learned a lot. So this learning piece is so important. We have to get good at it. And not just learning what has happened, but what is happening, right? Well, how do we do that? Well, we've got to have much better narrative with the people close to the work. So that's where this operational learning piece comes from. So our goal is to be less surprised by human errors, you know, people messing up, human error and failure, and a lot more interested in how work gets done. If you leave this little 30-minute session with me with just a little more curiosity, we've had a really good 30 minutes. If you didn't fall asleep, I'm sorry you missed your nap. But I hopefully this will inspire a little bit more curiosity, because it's not really that interesting to me when humans mess up. And the learning team approach, there's some few things around it. I'll just share a couple of basic sort of techniques around it. But the real deal there is if you make it safe for people to tell you the truth, they'll tell you the deal. Not everything, because I'm still not sure, because I remember what you did to Alex. But I'll start to talk more, because not knowing it doesn't make us better. Right, Todd, wherever you are? Yeah, there you are. So you guys have all either seen, heard, maybe some of you have, some of you haven't, but the black line, blue line. And this has taken several different iterations as time has gone on. We started out with the drift model, which I believe, is that DOE, Todd, where that came from originally? So it's like the plan, and you drift from the plan, and the hazards intersect, boom, you have a bad thing happen. What's wrong with the drift plan? It's not bad. We use it for a couple of years in the hop world. But what does it sound like? If you just would have stayed on the plan, we'd have been good to go. Well, we already said plans aren't perfect. So what plan do you want me to stay on? So what we did is we said, you know what? The more we did this operational learning stuff, we're like, it actually looks more like that. You know, I think this lines up nicely. You see Eric Hollenagel's work. He's got all those lines of variability. It's too confusing for me because he's smarter than I am. So this is the Bob Edwards simple version and the Todd Conklin. So we just made it simple because it's just a sense-making model. Now, that blue line for the most part represents what? People managing the variability, which leads mostly to success, normally successful. Agree? So we're all together so far. No problems yet? We used to show, and you can still show this. You can do whatever you want, because I'm not a consultant. I just like to share some of this stuff, right? So you can do whatever you want to with this. But I've done so many of these learning sessions that I'm actually thinking maybe that red line's not creeping up on us. Maybe it's kind of out there everywhere. So the recent change that kind of, I don't know, it looks something like that to me. We step over it, we dodge it, we duck it, right? I did some work with the U.S. Navy, and I'm on the most advanced aircraft carrier on planet Earth. They don't use steam anymore. They use electromagnetics to launch these things. They said that launch mechanism is strong enough to launch a Toyota Camry a mile, which I'm guessing somebody did. Daniel, where's your car? Oh, is that your car? Right? Somehow they knew it would launch a Toyota Camry. That's very specific. So they're lining up 100. So what's the product of the military? Somebody said, to start wars. We don't start wars. I'm an old Army guy. I was a Cold War guy, right? We didn't start wars. Our job is to do what our government tells us to go do. But what is their product? Combat readiness. Thank you. Yep. And so how much time do they want in between launches of aircraft? Bare minimum. Now, they have a lot of problems because they're moving these things rapidly, and they'll get these reports, aircraft damage, unknown origin. Why is that? Well, because they're writing these guys up and busting their ranks. So what do they tell them? I'm not talking, right? Do you blame them? So anyway, they launch these things, and as soon as they launch that aircraft, they start to bring another $120 million F-18 up there to launch it. And there was a young lady there. She's a sailor, and her job is to stand right over top of that trough that's got the shuttle in it. The shuttle's down there because they just launched an airplane. So she stands right here, and she lines up another F-18. It's amazing, right? And guess what? While she's doing this, guess what that shuttle does? Shoom, right into place. Not as much force as launching, but if she's ever standing here, where's her foot going? Shoom, right? Just snap her foot off, wouldn't even care. All day long, where's that red line? I don't know, right there. And you start thinking about work. I think somebody actually mentioned it earlier. Work's not inherently safe. I think work is inherently dangerous. I'm a maintenance guy and a maintenance manager. Everything inside a pipe wants to do what? Get out, yeah. Everything, electricity is looking for what? A ground. Everything on top of a cabinet wants top of your head, right? Everything on the ground is trying to trip you. But we're mostly successful until we're not. If enough of these things come together, I think Eric Hollenagel calls it the coupling of normal variability. But basically, if it's a bunch of that stuff out there comes together, you have a bad day. And so what we're learning is the power of learning from who? The masters of the work. I had a plant manager who said, you know, I was having trouble. I'd go out there and talk to people when something would happen. What's your name? Robert. Yeah, I met you a minute ago. He'd go, you know, Robert, I used to do that job. And he couldn't figure out why Robert wouldn't talk to him. When a plant manager says to you, I used to do that job, what does that sound like? I already know. And he said he went through some of this stuff with us, and he was like, maybe my question's not good. Now what he does, and he said it absolutely worked. He said, I'll go out there now, and I'll say, you know, Robert, I used to do that job, but it's been a long time. What's it like now? See the difference? That's not nuanced. That's very different. That's a leader who's, I mean, they call it humble leadership, right? I don't really know. I mean, it's a great term. Eggershine did amazing work in this space. You should read it. But if I'm an old maintenance guy, so I don't really know any humble leaders. I mean, Jesus and Gandhi, but my plant manager was neither one of those guys, right? I know a lot of, like, but being teachable is what it sounds like to me, right? So a really good leader is a teachable leader who says, you know, I used to do that job, Robert. I don't do it anymore. What's it like now? Now you have a little more of an opportunity to maybe teach that leader. I told you, curiosity, right? Curiosity is key. So this is one of Todd's slides he shows a lot, is fighting against that hindsight bias. Because you know, after something happens, what are we? What are we? Geniuses, aren't we? Smartest people in the room. Once something bad happens, you should have, you could have. Why didn't you, right? Like, aren't we all now experts? I mean, aren't we really? How much do you know about OceanGate before that catastrophic, horrific failure? How much did you know about them? I didn't know anything about them. My daughter, one of my daughters, oh my word, she somehow is fixated on this thing. I told her she should get a business degree because she's in everybody's. So she's like, Stockton Rush did this and Stockton Rush did that. And he was an idiot and he should have and he could have. And it's just all stuff from the news, right? And I said, sweetheart, Stockton Rush died that day. He was in that. He thought he was going to do what? Take the people down to see the Titanic and come back up. It was on a suicide run. And yet, what is the world doing? Well, we're judging him all in hindsight. Oh, he did this. He had a joystick from a PlayStation. I mean, we got all these reasons why he failed, right? In hindsight. So what we want to try to do is fight against that hindsight bias. And when you have a complex problem, oftentimes you'll get somebody who'll bring you like a really simple, clean answer. Yeah, and I'd say it's probably wrong. If it's a complex problem, what does it deserve? Money, complex, yeah, complex answer. So our goal is to understand and to move away from some of these tools like the infamous five whys. Been around a long time. I like to pick on this one because I used to use it a lot. It's better than what we had before, which is the one who. Who did this? Right? At least the five whys, I can say, that's Glenn, right? You know when this was created? 1920s with Sekichi Toyota. It was to try to get it. It's 1920s. I wasn't around then. I'm old, but I ain't that old. What were they talking about when it comes to complexity back in the 1920s? They really weren't. I mean, some people on some mountain were probably, but not the rest of us, the rest of them. So that tool does not really do a good job of unlocking complexity. What we try to do with operational learning is we say, hey, an event happened. That shows me there's challenges or brittleness or struggles in the system. And that brings us together oftentimes, event-based. And so we back away from the event with operational learning, and we start asking the team to teach us, the masters of the blue line, to teach us about all the world of work. And it's a mess, and they know all of it. They can teach us all this stuff, the weak signals, the challenges in the program, and the design of the system. They'll come up with hazards and risks, too. But when you do a good job of learning from those who do the work, and I've done a bunch of these. Like I said, I'm not a consultant. I'm just sharing with you what it's been like for me. By the time we get to the event, guess what? The event is, it's no surprise at all. In most cases, I'm like, crap, how do we not have that happen every day? You know why we don't? Where's my adaptability person right here? Somebody said, yes. The reason we don't have it happen every day is because of the incredible adaptive sort of capacity of humans. And so we started doing these things, right? We started doing more and more operational learning and realizing, wow, all that stuff that's out there, it's kind of out there all the time, which means you can use the 5Y, but it's very limiting. See how much it misses? And it usually lands with blame on Glenn, right? So let's talk about just for a minute the difference between really success and failure, and that might lead us to sort of a different way of looking at learning. If you look at success, guess what it looks like? It's the same stuff. Just a whole bunch of stuff went well. You ever have a really bad day and say, man, that felt like a perfect storm? You know why it did? Because it was. Like, there's nothing wrong with rain, nothing wrong with wind, barometric pressure change, temperature change. Put it all together in the right sort of pattern, and it is a tornado, and there is a problem. So work is a bunch of variables. And on a really bad day, a bunch of those variables do what? Don't work for us, right? And we end up in a mess. You ever have a really good production day? Right? And you say, man, what did we do today? Let's do it again tomorrow and nobody can tell you. You know why? It was a complex adaptive success. A whole bunch of those variables did what? Worked pretty darn good today. There wasn't one thing. But the problem is we're desperately looking for a root cause, right? We all have been. I was too. Even in engineering problems, we look for the root cause. And for most of the stuff, I don't really think anything that's, I don't know, it's not necessarily a root cause, it's just a bunch of variables. So the more comfortable we get around this sort of variability conversation, the more we'll learn. So there it is. There's a really successful day. It's the same stuff. Like, I've done all these learning teams. I can't think of a single one where I actually learned something that was new to them. New to me, because a lot of it's new to me, right? But, like, I've never heard... I hear a lot of, yeah, we have that occasionally, or that happens every day, or every once in a while we'll see that. Like, I've never heard somebody say in a learning team, we had an alien abduction. And I live in Tennessee near a trailer park, and you know some of them have been abducted. Reality is, most of the stuff they see, there was no ominous music playing. You ever watch a scary movie? It's like, don't open the door, listen to the music! Right? They open the door and get stabbed to death, like, if you had just listened to the music. There's no ominous music playing at work except the stuff Glenn listens to. That's some dark stuff, brother. Reality is, it's just work. Where are my military people? Or ex-military? Where are you? Yeah, there we go. I was in Canada. I said, where are my military people? Nobody raised their hand. I'm like, that's right. We got you covered. What? I'm not being mean. In Australia, I always get some people around. So in the military, we talk about chain of events. Break a link in that chain of events. It's not a chain of events. It was just mission. We did not see that. In hindsight, it's a chain of events. But in reality, it was just mission. We were just doing what we thought we needed to do. We were adapting in the moment. So a couple more thoughts for you here. If we want a better answers and a deeper understanding, it's about the questions, how we ask them and what we ask. I love this one that Todd shares a lot. It's like, not why did you do that, but how do you normally do this? What does this normally look like? We focus a ton now on normal, everyday work, even when something bad has happened. We're not shy about the fact that something bad happened. We're just like, hey, let's start with what does normal look like? And we actually find out a ton of really good stuff. A few ingredients we find to be helpful. First of all, it's got to be a safe place to talk. Right? There's like a psychological safety way out of my league, right? I don't know those big terms. I'm an old maintenance manager, right? But what it means is it's got to be a safe place. If you want to do an operational learning session with my maintenance team, where would you do it? Where would you not do it? In the HR conference room, right? Like if you said, we're going to do a learning team meeting in the HR conference room, you know what they'd say? What time is that? Because I think I have COVID. Because it's bugged. Nah, it's not bugged. Oh, it's totally bugged, and you know it's bugged. If you're going to do a learning team with the HR HR team, do it there because they know how to turn the recording off. But if you're going to do it with maintenance, you go to their shop. If you want to do it with third shift, you go to their time, right? Let's be respectful. Let's treat people like, hey, I value you. I'll come to your world and your time, and I'll learn from you. So it's got to be a safe place to talk. We have to be curious as a leader and teachable. We do try to do this. We learn first. Give them a little soak time. Sometimes overnight works perfectly. Learn some more. And then we create our problem statement. So we wait. We learn first. Where are my lean people in here? Like lean, big advocate. Yeah, me too. I love lean stuff. I'm not going to ask you to repeat them, but the seven steps for problem solving. The first one is define your problem. We just say make it eight steps. Learn first. What happens if you define the problem before you've learned? You work on the wrong thing. Right? How many times you've done a Kaizen event? By the way, be careful. Kaizen, two different words. Kaizen, continuous improvement. Japanese word Kaizen, cooking the books. Look it up. You don't have to blame me. And I'm from the South, so we're like, we did a Kaizen event. I'm like, I bet you did. So in Kaizen, if we would slow down a minute and learn more. Dr. Deming desperately tried to tell us this. He's like, we're so busy working, we don't take time to slow down and learn. So this HOP stuff is just really the collection of all the good stuff that's been going on and kicking out the stuff that's a waste of time. That's what I love about it. It gives us kind of permission to question stuff that doesn't help. So we define our problems, and I love team-generated ideas. Love it. Because you know what they come up with? I have two engineering degrees. I think I can solve all kinds of problems. You know what I've learned to do? Shut up. You know, we have some of the most brilliant ideas and sometimes the most elegant and useful and doable. People closest to the work. You know why? Because they do it every day. Todd and I did a learning team at one of our GE appliance sites, and this is a 30-year-old ergonomic problem that we tackled. And the guy that did the job said, I've been thinking about this. Yeah, 1,000 times a day for 10 years. And he had an idea that no engineer had come up with to modify this part. And guess what? It worked brilliantly. Still need engineers. Don't get rid of us. Muy importante. But the idea to actually make the change came from who? The guy that does it 1,000 times a day. Interesting, right? So our goal is to build more industrial empathy, right? Not sympathy, like you're Aussies, you don't have sympathy for nobody, right? I'm Tennessee, I'm from the South, we don't either, we don't feel sorry for nobody, but empathy's different. That's where I walk in your shoes a minute, and guess what? Now I understand your world, I understand your pain, your struggle. Empathy is powerful. If I can understand it at a level where I'm like, yeah, I think I'd have done the same thing, I think it's good. All right, so if we think we already have the answer, what happens? Well, we stop asking questions, we stop listening, we certainly stop learning. I think the power to really get good at learning comes from realizing you probably don't know. Todd said to me one time, he said, you know, Bob, you're really good at this operational learning because you don't seem to know very much. Still can't figure out if that was a compliment or not. Reality is, not knowing is not a bad thing. We don't have to know all the answers. Matter of fact, people close to the work would like for us to ask and be curious. So, heard it earlier, I'll say it again. Workers not the problem we're trying to solve here. I think they're problem solvers. Fair enough? All right, so let's learn, improve, and build more capacity. I'm going to leave you with an example. And Todd and I did not coordinate this. It just happens when you work with somebody too much. Here's a sample for you. That is a toilet plunger. Now, I know Todd talked about toilet paper, but I'm going to take it to a new level. That's a standard toilet plunger. Do you guys have like a dollar store or a dollar savings store, whatever, right? So do you know they sell them there? Yeah. Yeah, they look like that. Sorry, that's too close to the working product. Oh, it's a plunger, but it ain't one I'm using. Now, the next one I believe was probably designed by a safety person because it has an ergo handle on it. Now, I got 8 boys and 4 girls, and those 8 boys can sure stop it up. So I might need the one with the ergo handle. And then I've got one I'm sure the NASA engineers must have denied that one. That right there. What the crap is that thing? But now I'm going to show you one that I believe was designed by a person who knows better than anybody else how to do this work. And I actually took this picture in a bathroom, which is probably inappropriate, but I believe this one was designed by the end user. That's a 2-meter paint stick with a toilet plunger on it. Now we're at a safe distance from the working end. That's what happens when you listen to people. All right, that's what I got for you. I think this quote from Ellen Goodman is brilliant. She said, "I've never been especially impressed by the heroics of people convinced they're about to change the world. I'm more awed by those who struggle to make one small difference." And we can have all this stuff. We give all this stuff away. Todd's stuff, my stuff, Andy's stuff. It's all at the Hop Hub. You can just get it. We give it all away. And there's a Hop community, too, for those of you that are into, like, social media stuff. I'm not. It's not safe for me. I'm too old. The closest thing I do to social media is LinkedIn. But that Hop community is a lot of people doing this stuff. It's cool. They work on all kinds of problems. And I'll share this with you real quickly. I have a family chat for anybody 20 and above in my family. So it's for adults, right? Well, my youngest daughter, and I adore her, but good gravy, she puts a flake in snow. Holy crap, everything offends her. And I adore her. Me and her going walks with her dog and her cat, whatever, right? But she recently joined the family chat last year because she's old enough to be in there. So I also have a son who's a Marine and a truck driver. Sounds like a bad joke about to happen, doesn't it? So it's a snowflake, truck driver, and a Marine all together. So anyway, it's their younger sister. They pick on her just unbelievable, right? They just pick on her. And so she gets madder and madder and madder. And I try to stay out of it because they're all adults. But last year, I was like, okay, I got to get involved here. She was just getting furious. And so I thought, I'll change the subject because that's what a good dismissive sort of dad does, right? So I said, hey, guys, I may get an earlier flight. So I got the earlier flight, and I sat down in my plane seat, and I took a picture, like a selfie thing, right? I usually do them like this, and they said, don't, Dad, you can see up your nose. So I did it like this, and I said, I just typed in one little phrase, W-O-O-H-O-O, woohoo! At the same time that my lovely, wonderful snowflake daughter typed in, I'm getting off family chat, it's too toxic. My phone looked fine. The Android, only Android owner is me. Mine looked fine. And my wife's like, no, sweetheart, Dad's not talking about you. I'm like, what's wrong with everybody? To everybody else, it looked like I'm getting off family chat. It's too toxic. And Dad said, woohoo. So now anytime something crazy happens, my Marine son types in, woohoo. Smart ass. All right, that's what I got for you. Hope that helps a little bit. We'll see you guys around.
So, Bob, you just legitimately just came off the stage, and I just stole you as soon as possible. If I can get you a little bit closer to the microphone for operational learning, that's exactly what you're just covering at this event. So what do you think?
It's always my goal that it helps a bit. The group that was here, I mean, it seems like they're really engaged. They're paying attention to all these different presentations. Everything's kind of like building throughout the day. It's really been fun. So, yeah, it's a privilege to go. And I like to go right after lunch, seriously, because it's a chance to see, okay, can you keep people engaged after lunch? Seemed like they were pretty engaged. So
No, you definitely had them engaged. They were laughing up to your story. I have to tell you, you were one of the best storytellers that I've ever heard. And I don't say that because you're sitting in the room. It's just legit in regards to some of the stuff that you cover. And the way that you tie in some of your stories into some of the serious aspects of the operational learning, I just love how you do the blend of it. And you've seen this now. I mean, you were talking a few moments ago that you've been doing this since 2011, give or take. Mm-hmm. What have you seen transpire? I mean, think about it now. We just have 603 people sitting in this other room.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah, it's mind-blowing to watch this happening and to be able to have a small part in this. And that's what I love about this is anybody who gets involved in this has a part in this. Like, there's no end. I love that even the name of this conference, Safety Innovation. There's no end to innovation. Innovation is just infinite as the mind is capable of thinking of new ways of doing stuff. So I love the fact that they brought these people together, and some of them are probably really new to this. Some of them are incredibly experienced. I mean, you've got Todd and Sydney who've been doing this for a long time. And so, yeah, it's really pretty remarkable to see this many companies come together and want to know more about this stuff.
And, of course, thinking that we're here in the gong, I mean, did you think back in 2011 when you started going down this journey, this would have been something that you were looking at, something that would be going on?
Jay, not only did I question, when we first started this, they had earlier a pre-recorded thing from Fredericks, Mr. Fredericks, from Jim from Fredericks, OSHA. From OSHA. Mm-hmm. I literally remember people saying to me when I first started working with Todd inside GE, they said, doesn't matter what you guys do, OSHA will never change.
And all I could say then was, well, maybe not, but OSHA is made up of people. And so if the industrial social norms change enough, I mean, we actually have Jim Fredericks, a huge hop advocate, as one of the leading, he's like, I don't remember his title, but it's like...
Secretary. He's the secretary. Yeah, he's assistant secretary.
Assistant secretary of OSHA is now in there, a huge advocate for HOP. How about that, right?
I mean, you kind of look at it and you would never expect something along these lines to actually be happening. And think about the messaging. All of a sudden, you're thinking 2011. All of a sudden, you just have Jim Fredericks from OSHA do this. We're in Australia. They're showing a video from OSHA from the U.S. here.
Yep.
So as you come off the stage, was there anything that you weren't able to cover because of due to time constraints?
Actually, no. I went 1 minute over so that I could tell the joke about me screwing up the family chat thing that I did. I hit the high spots that I wanted. I think if people are curious about this, there's some people doing some really good work in this space. Just reach out to them, learn from them. Right? It's not rocket science, but it's also not always easy. And sometimes people need some encouragement and, sometimes it gets pretty challenging.
So I'm going to ask you a general feelings question. This morning when they were doing the introduction, the CEO of BlueScope stood up there and he used language that you're very familiar with. When you heard him speak in that fashion, which is, it's popular language between us.
Right.
What'd you think?
Well, that goes back to that sort of social norms shift that's happening, right? Then when the industrial norms are shifting so much that a CEO speaks this with clarity, right? And I didn't feel like he was saying it because he thought it was the right thing to say. I mean, he believes this. And wow, that's powerful. I mean, lots of people in the safety world believe this, but there's actually some people in the safety world that still don't know what this is. So hopefully this is helping some of the people even in the safety world that's new at this to say, this is a little different than just focusing on, investigations and inspections and audits and all those things have their place. But it was really cool to hear a CEO. I know at my little site in GE Appliances, when my plant manager and I did a presentation and to watch him speak like fluently in this sort of language was just awesome, right? Because his goal is to make a lot of product,
right?
I mean, we don't have factories to manufacture safety, right? We have factories and processes and refineries to manufacture products. And so to see someone with that incredible sort of capacity to make stuff happen, also be able to speak fluently about this approach, this hop approach is brilliant.
No, it was just amazing to see. Yep. Well, Bob, thanks for always trying to make this world a little better place. If you want to find out more information about what Bob Edwards has going on, hophub.org is the place to see it, right?
Yes.
Thanks, Bob.
Yep.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.